Nehemiah chapter 7, we read in verse 5 of the chapter, Nehemiah is speaking here. Verse 5, we read, "My God put into mine heart to gather together the nobles and the rulers and the people, that they might be reckoned by genealogy. And I found a register of the genealogy of them which come up at the first, and found written therein." As part of the constitution of the United Kingdom, the act of taking a census has literally been around for almost a millennium. In 1086, William I, he took a census, and he carried out the first census, and he recorded the details of that census in what was known as his Doomsday Book. Now, as of the Census Act of 1920, the United Kingdom, we have a census once every 10 years. Now, why do we have a census? Well, the government has census to establish literally the lie of the land. It helps the government to understand the religious beliefs, the social standing, the social conditions of the country. It helps them to understand the age, the life expectancy. And therefore, in having all of this information, it enables them to govern the country more effectively. In 2011, the Londonderry Area Census, it recorded that there were almost 112,000 people living in the area. Now fast forward to 2017, and it is estimated that that figure has escalated to over 120,000. However, in this chapter, in Nehemiah chapter 7, we find that the act of having a census, it has been around an awful lot longer than one millennium. It has actually been around for far longer. After the walls were completed, what did Nehemiah do? Well, in the early part, in the early verses of this chapter, we find that Nehemiah, the governor, he moved to govern the people. In verse 1, you find him as governor. He appointed sentries over the people. Now, these were essentially men who opened the gates and closed the gates, and they were also on top of the walls protecting that city. He not only appointed sentries, but then in verse 2, he moved to appoint superintendents. He then appointed those who would help him govern the city of Jerusalem. And then in verse 3, after appointing these men, they then find him giving them special tasks to do. And after taking measures to protect the city and organize the city and govern the city, Nehemiah, he then was moved by God to take a census of the people. Nehemiah, basically, he hunted out the old records and he began to dig deep, and he basically surveyed the families that had returned 100 years previously after the captivity of Nebuchadnezzar. After doing this review, then in Nehemiah chapter 11, you actually find him conducting a proper census of the people. But here in this chapter, Nehemiah chapter 7, we find him basically doing a review of the population to know exactly the lie of Jerusalem. You see, he wanted to know the quantity, he wanted to know the ability, he wanted to know the activity of the people in Jerusalem. And as Nehemiah reviewed the people in earthly Jerusalem, so the Lord will count his people in the new Jerusalem. The Lord Jesus Christ, one day, he will return. He will return to this earth. He will, as it were, do that work of heavenly census. And my friend, I wonder this morning, as the Lord Jesus Christ, as he returns to this earth, someday, we do not know when the day is, but whenever he returns and he gets out his heavenly register and he gets out his heavenly census and he runs down the names of those who, as it were, have placed their faith and trust in him, the question is, will your name be there? Will your name be in the heavenly census? Will your name, as that list is given, will your name be one of those whom Jesus Christ, the greater than Nehemiah, will find written down? Indeed, reminding us of the counting or reckoning of the Lord's people, we read in Psalm 87, verse 6, we read, "The Lord shall count when he writeth up the people, that this man was born there. And here the Lord, he's speaking of Zion or of Jerusalem. And God, he stated that the Lord would count or record or reckon the people who were born in Zion. You see, as well as recording your physical birth, the Lord Jesus, he records your spiritual birth. He records the day when you were born again. Oh, my friend, this morning, are you born again? I'm not asking you if you've been physically born. You are sitting here this morning, you're a testimony to that. But I'm asking you, have you been born again? Have you been twice born? And as a result, has your name, as it were, has it been recorded amongst the people of God? Oh, my friend, when Jesus Christ returns to this earth, and he, as it were, takes that heavenly census, and he scans down the pages of the book of life, will your name be there? Will your name be there this morning? Have you placed your faith in the Lord Jesus Christ? Because if your name is not there, if your name is not in the heavenly census, then you will be sadly cast into hell. And so this morning I want to draw your attention to this census, the census of Jerusalem. I think firstly here, we notice their administration, Verse 1, we read, "Now it came to pass when the wall was built, and I had set up the doors, and the porters and the singers and the Levites were appointed." Nehemiah, he was now governor of Jerusalem. He had firstly appeared on the pages of Nehemiah as a cupbearer, and then we saw him in chapter 2 changing to be a builder. And now another transformation has taken place. Now the cupbearer come builder has now become the governor of Jerusalem. And now we see the governor begin to govern. Verse 1, he set sentries or watchmen over the city. Now whilst the children of Judah, whilst they would have built the walls and they have now repaired the gates, it still needed manpower to man these edifices. Matthew Henry stated, "Dead walls without living watchmen are a poor defence to a city." And so what did Nehemiah do? He has set watchmen who would watch over the city night and day, and they would protect the city. He appointed individuals to protect the city, but he also appointed individuals to govern the city with him. You see, Nehemiah couldn't run the city all on his own. Verse 2 we read, "I gave my brother Hananiah, and Hananiah, the ruler of the palace, charge over Jerusalem." And after appointing these individuals, he then told them specifically what to do. You see, Nehemiah, he appointed people under him to govern the physical and the spiritual welfare of Jerusalem. And as well as counting his people, the Lord, he controls and governs his people in his church. He appoints those of leadership positions to govern his people. Remember this, that yes, the church of Christ, it is a body. It is a spiritual organism, but it is also a spiritual organization. And because the church of Christ is a spiritual organization, then that means it needs to be governed. That means that the church, it needs to be led, that it needs to be managed, that it needs to be directed. And that's why the Lord has appointed the office of the elder and the deacon. They are given to govern his church. Indeed, reminding us of governing the church and its importance, we read in Titus 1 verse 5, Paul speaking to Titus here, and he said, "For this cause left I thee in Crete, that thou shouldest set in order the things that are wanting, and ordain elders in every city as I had appointed thee." Paul here, he wrote to Titus, and he said there were things wanting or things lacking. One of the things lacking in the island of Crete was that, yes, there were churches, but there was nobody to govern the churches. And so Paul, he left Titus in Crete. Why? To establish the government of the church, to ordain elders in every city. You see, as well as delivering his church and defending his church, the Lord sovereignly directs his church. He governs his church and his people. And he governs his church just like Nehemiah here, as he sought out faithful men, men of caliber, men who had proved themselves and other things. So the Lord takes that type of people and he uses them in his church. There are some within the ranks of Christendom today, and they have a very, very low view of the church. They say that the church shouldn't be governed. They say, oh, it's just a body of people. There's no need to have leadership. But that's not true. Yes, the church is a body of people, but the church needs to be governed. It is biblical that the church of Christ is governed. You even see this in the natural realm. On Thursday, this country is having an election. What are we doing? We're meeting to elect those who represent our local area. We're appointing representatives to make decisions for us. And this is important. I suggest to you, you take away the local government, the national government, the international government, then society will descend into anarchy. It will descend into chaos. And if it's important in the natural realm, how much more then in the spiritual realm? If we do not have those to govern our church spiritually, then the church of Christ will descend into chaos. And this is what Nehemiah does. Before he even moves to take the census, he appoints governors. He appoints those to lead the city of Jerusalem. Their administration. But I want you to see, secondly, here, their calculation. Their calculation. Verse 4, we read, now the city was large and great, but the people were few therein, and the houses were not builded. After setting up those in charge, he began to reckon or count this people. In verse 5, you then find he began to count or reckon by genealogy. Now, whenever Nehemiah began to count the amount of people in Jerusalem, he was actually quite surprised at his findings, I believe. Because whilst Jerusalem was a large landmass, yet we find that the people who were actually in Jerusalem were a relatively small amount of people. Verse 66 tells us that there were currently 42,000 people in Jerusalem. Then verse 67 mentions 7,000 servants. And so there we find that there is approximately 49,000 people in Jerusalem along with their animals. Now you think about that for a moment. There is over double the amount of people here in this city. I've just told you, close to 120,000. And a city the size of Jerusalem, you imagine it. And over only 49,000 people living there. You see, what happened was many, whenever they were taken captive to Babylon, they grew content in Babylon, and sadly, their families, they never returned to Jerusalem again. The amount of people in physical Jerusalem was a relatively small amount of people. And the Church of Christ is not numerically in the majority, but in the minority. In comparison to the billions of people on this earth, the people in the Church of Christ, the amount of people is relatively small. Often, sometimes, we look around and we ask ourselves the question, why are people not flocking to Christ? Why are people not even following Christ? Why are people not flocking to hear the gospel? It's because the Lord's people have always been in the minority. The question is not really, what is the number? The question is, am I part of that number? And let me ask you this morning, are you part of that relatively small number? Yes, there is a great number that no man can number in one sense. But when you think of the billions of people on this earth, the Church of Christ, numerically, it is quite small. But the question is not, what's that number? The question is, am I in the number? The question to you this morning, are you in that number? Are you saved? Are you part of spiritual Jerusalem? Are you part of the Lord's people? Are you counted in the heavenly census. Indeed, in 1 Peter 3, verse 20, Peter here, he moves to encourage suffering Christians by reminding them of the days of Noah. And he said in 1 Peter 3, verse 20, which sometime were disobedient, when once the long-suffering of God waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was a-preparing, wherein few, that is, eight souls were saved by water. Noah had preached for years. He had preached about the coming judgment, preached about the coming flood upon the earth. Then you think about it. Society, what did they do? They had watched this faithful, godly man take his tools and gradually build the ark. Oh, they had been warned for decades. And yet when it came to it, when the judgment of God, when the rains fell, there were only eight saved. Only eight. Only eight were actually found in the ark. Noah and his wife and his family. Christ is not popular. Christ is unpopular. And he promised that the world, in hating him, would hate his people too. The Church of Christ is and will be in the minority. She is different. She is despised. She is discarded. In comparison to society, there will always be a few in the church's ranks. And the question this morning again is not how few. The question is, are you? Are you in? Are you in not only this physical building, as it were, but are you in the spiritual building of Jesus Christ? Are you a member of Christ? Are you partaking of his blood? Do you know his forgiveness? Do you experience his pardon on a daily basis? Let me ask you this morning, are you found in Jesus Christ? When that calculation is done, are you there? Will you be there? Are you counted in? Is your name written on that heavenly census? You know, there was a house that caught fire, and a little boy, he was stranded in the house. He had to climb to the roof. The father was waiting down below, and he shouted out to his boy, "Jump, I'll catch you." The boy, he knew he had to jump to be safe, but he couldn't see. He was very scared. The smoke, as it were, it was blinding him. His father, he kept shouting, "Jump, I'll catch you." And the boy, he said, "Daddy, I'm not going to jump. I can't see you." And the dad replied, "Son, you may not be able to see me, but I can see you. And that's all that matters." And this morning, all that matters is not, are there few in the church? All that matters is that you are in the church, that you are in Jesus Christ, that you are safe, that you are calculated amongst the redeemed. Are you in this morning? Whenever that roll is called up yonder, will you be there? Will you be counted in? Their administration, their calculation. I want you to notice thirdly here, their relations. Relations. Verse 8 we read, the children of Parosh, 2,172. In this census and catalogue of returners from Jerusalem, there are approximately 10 divisions of people and places. And beginning at verse 8, Nehemiah, he continues until the end of verse 66, where he mentions the total number of returners. Now, there are many different groups here that were counted. There were Levites, there were servants, there were priests, there were singers, there were Nethinims, there were even towns mentioned here. But I think it's very, very telling how Nehemiah starts this counting process. He doesn't count those who are engaged in religious service. He doesn't count the priests first. He doesn't count the Nethinims, the carriers of water first. No, no, no. He starts with families. In verse 8 until verse 25, he lists the families that returned. And in counting the people, he counted the father. He counted the head of the home. And then he counted their sons and so on and so forth. You see, when he started the census that it was in Jerusalem, he started with the families. And whilst you should ensure your own salvation, you should also desire the salvation of your family. You should desire the salvation of your spouse, sons, and siblings firstly. Oh, my friend, seek not only to ensure that your name is written down in that census, but seek to ensure that your family's name is written as well. Just as Nehemiah began with the family, so I say to you this morning, start with your family. Start witnessing to your family. Start praying for your family. Start praying for your husband, your wife, your son, your daughter. And seek to win them firstly to Jesus Christ. Yes, it is good to serve others in other capacities. Good to serve Jesus Christ. But here the Lord wants you to start with your family. Let me ask you this morning, are you saved? And if you're saved, are the members of your family saved? Have you a lost son, a lost daughter, a lost husband, a lost wife? Seek to win your family first to Christ. Indeed, in Acts 16, Paul, he came to Philippi and he met Lydia, and Lydia was converted. And interestingly, in the next verse, after reading of Lydia's conversion, we read in Acts 16, verse 15, that she was baptized and her family. And what actually had happened was Lydia had been saved herself, and then she went home and she found her family members. She witnessed to them. They were saved, and then they were baptized. You see, she was saved, and then her family was saved subsequently. And whilst you should ensure the salvation of your friends, firstly seek the redemption of your family. Start at home and work from there. Oh yes, it's good to see names written in that heavenly census. Good to see names written down in the Lamb's Book of Life. Those next to you, your neighbours, your friends, your colleagues, your college mates. But don't neglect home. Don't be so busy with trying to win others to Christ that you forget about those at home. That you forget about those in your family. Billy Sunday was a great evangelist. He saw literally thousands come to Christ under his preaching. He travelled all through America, preaching the gospel, preaching against the public vices of the world. But you know, Billy Sunday had three sons and one daughter. And between them, they had nine marriages. One of them sadly died whilst drink driving. And one fell from a hotel window again whilst drunk. And it seems perhaps that one of the negatives of the life of Billy Sunday was that he was so busy preaching all around America that he forgot about his own family. And his own family perished. Oh, my friend, don't be so interested in other families that you forget about your own family. Start it at home and work from there. This census, their administration, their calculation, their relations. But I want you to notice fourthly and lastly their prohibition. Their prohibition. Verse 64 we read, they sought their register among those that were reckoned by genealogy, but it was not found. Therefore were they as polluted, put from the priesthood. Nehemiah here, he was cataloguing families and labours that had returned from Babylon. But it seems that as he was counting those who were of Jewish ethnicity, it seems there were some who couldn't prove their ancestry. They didn't have the necessary documentation to prove that they were Jews. Verse 61, it seems that they couldn't show their father or their children, from their father or children, that they were of Jewish descent. Now, this was a serious problem. If you could not prove that you were a Jew, then it meant you lost your privileges as one of the Lord's people. It means that meant that you were cut off from your inheritance in the land. Also, we find that in verse 64, there were priests, and they were actually banished from the priesthood. They were counted as unclean or polluted. And because there were some who couldn't prove their Israeli ethnicity, they lost their privileges as a Jew, they lost their position as a Jew, and they lost their plot in the promised land. And if you're not redeemed, then you're not recorded. You are not in the heavenly census. if you have never been purchased by Jesus Christ. Oh, what a loss this morning. What a loss. What a loss that whenever Jesus Christ, as it were, scans that catalogue of names, and your name is sadly not written down, you will lose out on so much. You will lose out on the privileges of a Christian, the privilege of being adopted into the family of Christ. You will lose out in your position as in Jesus Christ. My friend, you will lose out in your plot in heaven. Oh, what a loss it would be if your name is not in the heavenly census. Oh, what great a loss it would be that you could hear about it, that you could hear about that census sometime in the future, but yet never make preparation, that you would never be found in the book of life. You know, in Revelation 20, read about that fateful day in verse 15. Whosoever was found not written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. And John here is very, very explicit. He says, if your name's not in that book of the people of Jesus Christ, then you're not taken to heaven. But your name, you and your soul and your body will be cast into hell. If you're not on the register, then you will be cast out, not let in. You will be cast out, prohibited, exiled to an eternity in hell. Oh, my friend, this morning, ensure that your name is written in that census, is written in that book of life. Because what a terrible thing it would be for you to be prohibited, for you to be banished from an eternity in heaven. You know, in Edinburgh Castle, there is Scotland's Memorial to the Dead. As you walk into the middle of that castle, there's a rock that's bursting forth through the marble floor. And on that rock, there's an altar. And on that altar, there is a book. And on inside that book is the name of every Scotsman who gave their lives for Scotland in World War I. And whilst we commemorate their memory, and their memory will live on in time, my friend, I'm asking you this morning, is your name written in an eternal book? Is your name written in the Lamb's book of life? Make sure your name endures in eternity. The Lord shall count when he writeth up the people, that this man was born there. Ensure that whenever the Lord returns, if you're not taken before then, ensure that your name is clearly written down, that your name is in his book, the census of Jerusalem. May God bless his word to your hearts and lives this morning.